Welcome to another edition of Shabbat Torah Study. I'm Larry, and William's also setting in with me to give my voice a little bit of a break here. I've been on the phone all day up until about 10 minutes ago. So I'm a little frazzled. It was a long week, and it's good to have the Shabbat break. And so welcome, everybody. And feel free to call in, too. Voice your opinions. Got anything to say, please. I mean, just it's wide open. The number's 347-326-9553. That's 346-326-9553, and I'll be happy to put you on. I figured we'd go back to the 119th Psalm. Does that sound good, William?
Yeah, that sounds great, Larry. Yeah, okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. You're on.
All right.
Yeah, I hear you.
The only reason I ask, I'm getting a little bit of a static on my phone. I apologize.
I can't hear any static here. Sounds good to
okay.
me.
Okay.
So I think we're okay. If you want to hang up and call back in, if it's bothering you, you can do that, too. I mean,
yeah, that's fine. I'll just transfer
it to
another phone.
Okay. But anyway, I'm going to start out at the 119th Mizmor, or Song, 119:43, and I can't remember exactly where we were. We may have gone as far as 47, but, you know, there's some really good points made in 43, and I just want to go over that again.
Yeah.
And, my enunciation is nowhere near Craig's when it comes to Hebrew. So I'm going to read it in English, and then you know the words we really have to look at. You know we'll go over. But he starts out here. He's saying, "So please do not ever take away from my mouth the word of your truthful, your unchanging and unwavering, your dependable, trustworthy, reliable, utterly capable, empowering, and great, everlasting testimony. Because indeed, I am completely resolved to placing my hope completely, trusting in your words." Now, the Masoretic text, instead of your words, says your ordinances. But, you know, that's one of the things I wanted to point out here is that Yahweh talks about his voice and he talks about his words. He's not real big on talking about his ordinances. You know, he doesn't ask a lot of us, but he does ask us to seriously consider his words.
Right.
And, you know, when people start getting into words like obedient for Shamar, which we know Shamar was up here, and they call his words ordinances, Yahweh's words certainly contain some ordinances, but certainly not all of his words are ordinances. And his testimony comes from his words. And that's one of the reasons that we have religion today, you know, is because men decided to take it upon themselves and replace his words with their own concepts. And these things lead to changing Yahweh's very nature, and this is why so few people truly understand him and understand what he's really looking for. Relationship as opposed to, you know, religiously lording over people shaking in fear. Wouldn't that be fair to say? I mean,
yeah, no, that's fair to say. I mean, it's a perpetual issue that I'm consistently running into. And worst part about it is that people just blatantly refuse to accept his words. And so, I mean, how do you dispute or debate anybody who just won't accept the Creator's words? I mean, it's counterproductive.
Well, yeah, it is kind of, there's no need in debating them at that
right.
point. You just walk away. But sadly, you cannot get into people's heads that this isn't magic. It's not what people call spiritualism.
Right.
You know, I'm going to think so purely and so hard. I'm going to have a vision, and it's going to tell me what to do. You know, Yahweh tells us what to do in His words. We don't have to have visions.
Yeah,
you know?
and they take something like Psalms 119, right? And I'll tell you a quick story. I'm looking, you know, reading through this with my kids. What I've been doing, Larry, is on Shabbat, like tomorrow, I'll sit down with my daughter and my 6-year-old and, you know, my 12-year-old and my 15-year-old is more than welcome. They're always welcome to sit down. But the 6-year-old, she'll come over and we'll sit down and she understands Shabbat. She understands Torah and it's time to read the Torah. And we go through Psalms 119, or we've been going through it. And, you know, Yahweh says that the Torah writes here that the Torah is fun. It's fun. And when my daughter sees this, and this is Psalms 119, verse 16, you know, concerning your clearly communicated prescriptions of what I should do, I find them fun, even enjoyable. I will never overlook or ignore your word. And my daughter, Shaylin, got such a kick out of this. And she said, it's fun, Daddy. And I said, yes, the Torah is fun. And she thoroughly enjoys reading this, and I love it. I love it. This is the 6-year-old is the one who's always having a blast when she hears Larry singing, I got the lime and the coconut.
Well, you know, it says right there it's fun, so it's fun. You know, it's in writing. We have a caller, too, that called in, I think, a Texas area code, 214.
Okay. Hello.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Larry. I'm just listening
in
for a moment. Hey, it's Mike.
Oh, you're just listening in? Okay.
Yeah, for the moment.
Do you want me
anyway.
To put you on hold, or do you want to, you can chime in anytime you like.
Okay, I can move. Yeah. All
right. Larry, I'm gonna call right back. This phone's driving me crazy. I'll call you right back.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, anyway, throughout the psalm, Netzar is used, you know, to speak of salvation by way of observation, indicating that anybody who wants to comply with Yahweh's instructions are protected and they're preserved by them. In this case, he did not use Netzar, he used not Saul. And if you closely examine that word, it means to take. To save, to rescue, to deliver, to snatch away. And it's written using the hyphal stem, which tells us that God, who is the subject of the sentence, is enabling the psalmist, who's the object, and thus us, to participate in the process of God saving us by communicating His words. It's an important point because His words are what are continually corrupted by the religious establishment and by the religious, and then parroted by the religious initiates. And these are really the reasons that they don't know Yahweh. When they're reading this, they're not reading Torah, they're reading law. When He says to observe His words, they're reading obey His commands. And all these things collectively work to change Yahweh's very nature into a religious deity and a monster that I doubt many of us would want to be around for very long. Certainly I wouldn't. I'd rather not exist than be around a religious monster for all eternity. How do you feel about that, William?
I feel the same way, Larry, and I apologize to the family. This noise in the phone wasn't allowing me to gather my thoughts, but But
I can't hear it at all.
Yeah, no, it's gone now. I could hear it. You couldn't. But, no, I feel exactly the same way. I certainly wouldn't want to spend eternity with a monster.
Right. And if we look at religious material, it is far more Babylonian than it is Yahweh's words. I've always found it amazing when we go out and we're in a debate on FB and we're using Paleo-Hebrew breakdowns, and we show every possible word in parentheses right along with the statement being made.
Right.
And people will throw up what they have in their typical religious material, and they'll say, well, I don't think it says that. Well, you can see right there what it says. I notice you don't have parentheses behind every word you're putting down. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, talk about hypocritical.
Yeah.
It's never ceases to amaze me, but... anyway, that I'm going to go to 1944 here. And again, I will observe, and that's Shamar, which means stay focused upon, revere, cling to, respect, carefully examine and consider, investigating, scrutinizing, evaluating, so as to pay attention and to be protected by your Torah. And then we get into Torah, and we know that Torah does not mean law. And people that start looking at Torah as law, they're also looking to be judged, I suppose, because they're looking at Yahweh as the judge. Isn't that right? I mean, it's his law.
Right.
He must, sadly, people that end up wanting to, say, earn their salvation through all their good thoughts and their kind deeds and their pure hearts, things none of us, possess.
Right.
We might have to do kind deeds, but we're certainly not pure, as the driven snow. I'm not. I don't know anybody that is.
No.
And although there's people I really love and like and everything else, they're not perfect.
And it's
an
impossibility to associate law with fun. I mean, we just read that the Torah is fun,
Yeah. Your fun laws to obey. Yeah, that's
right.
That's pretty laughable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in Torah instruction and teaching, your source of Torah, way of treating me, tour, giving me the means to explore, to seek, to find, to choose. Yara, the source of instruction, teaching, guidance, direction that flows from you, which Tub provides answers to facilitate my restoration and return, even my response and reply to that which is Tob. That's good, pleasing, beneficial, favorable, healing, and right. And that which causes me to be loved, to become acceptable, to endure, tahor, and Torah, purifying and cleansing me, thereby tor, providing me with the opportunity to change my attitude, thinking, and direction. Continually and consistently, always and forever, as an eternal witness.
Wow.
That's forever.
That's right.
Eternal witness.
That's right.
So,
that means
people that
the Torah will
Paul
exist for eternity, yeah.
Definitely going to have a problem there. Go ahead, William. Sorry.
No, I'm just saying. I actually posted this on FB, I believe, last weekend, and I just thought it was pretty neat because Yahweh's word is consistent. I'll try to find it and bring it up in a little bit, but
start to finish. That's one of the things that's always amazed me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely seamless. There's never a break anywhere. There's never a contradiction. I mean, when you consider the I mean, there was only one author, but there were many hands or pens, mm-hmm. you know, and the
right.
hands of different men. And you know, you can sit her from start to finish. It's seamless.
Right.
It's something that really throws me for a loop. And when people start talking about the fact they don't believe in a God, which I've had plenty of people tell me that, they tell me they read the notes that I put out, but at the same
right.
time, they don't believe that there's a God, and this is pretty outrageous. And, you know, it would be, imagine, if you will, everybody out there, imagine if you had a 1,500-year period of time, roughly, and you were going to somehow or another have a lot of different people write these words
okay.
on your behalf, okay? And it all turned out perfect over, say, you know, a 1,000-year period of time. That would be impossible.
Right. Pretty much,
it
yeah.
just wouldn't happen. You know, it's not like they were all there in one book. There were people in different places and different eras of time. You know, they were called prophets, and they were writing these things down. And as you put them all together, they just all happen to become perfect. How do you suppose that is? A big accident? I mean, I don't know what the odds are. I mean, we could call Vegas and have them dig up Jimmy the Greek. Maybe he could tell us. But, you know, they're astronomical, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you'd hit the lotto a million times over before that can happen, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, people are always looking for proof. I mean, at some point there's so much proof. I just don't know what more could be added.
Yeah, and the fact that Yahweh, I believe it's in Yeshaya, when he speaks about these, you know, these weapons of destruction, you know, like helicopters and so forth, I mean, that's profound. Is it Zachariah? I'm sorry. No,
it's Zachariah when he's...
Right.
He's discussing the battle of the final battle, and he's talking about fast-flying war machines with drivers in them. And it's more amazing than that for those of us that understand the Yovel, which essentially everybody in the chat room, you know, everybody that's in here pretty much gets that.
Right.
And you know, you got to understand that it's not like there's been 2,000 years, you know, where there could be fast-flying, you know, drivers and winged war machines. That's only the last 100 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And it just happens to fall in that era, you know, where that final battle's being discussed. I mean, what are the odds of that? I mean, that's just
right.
one thing of many.
Right. Right.
You know, so,
I mean, isn't that proof in itself? Yeah.
You know? Well, yeah, that's if somebody wants to open their eyes a little bit. I mean, you're not just, he's not just a science fiction writer. When Zachariah wrote that, by the way, he said it was the 8th month of the 2nd year of King Darius. That made it 520 BCE. And that would make him a science fiction writer at that point, you know.
Wow.
Right?
See, that's impressive. I mean, really.
Yeah.
You know, how do you dispute that?
I have no idea. I guess you could say the a word like swoosh, you know, which has to do with taking flight. I guess you could say, well, that's your interpretation of it, but that's what it's speaking of. Something that takes flight. So I don't know. I you know, there's people that don't seem to like those breakdowns, but that's what it's saying. And now that we understand, you know, that it's the final battle, and we do have such things. I mean, it's pretty clear what he was writing, you know.
Right, and you also have Revelations where it speaks of a Phintos, right? Isn't that a
right,
meteor?
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, the one that they recently found.
Right.
Yeah, it's all seamless. Now, somebody else has called in from a Alaska area code.
907. Yeah, hi, Larry. Yeah, can you hear
me?
Yeah,
I can hear you.
good. Good to be with
your
you. This is my
now?
First time. My name's Tony. This is my first time calling into the show.
Oh, well, thanks for calling in, Tony.
Welcome, Tony. Welcome.
Got
thanks,
any questions
William.
Or comments?
Well, I did. It was on Psalm 119, but you guys went off onto a different topic, which was great. But, yeah, if you're ready, I can ask it.
Yeah, no, go ahead. I may have the answer. I may not. But shoot.
Well, see, here's what I don't understand, and I've been listening to you guys for a while, so, but, you know, here Dodd says, I will observe your Torah continually and consistently, always and forever, as the eternal witness. He also goes, you know, what you guys talked about before, where he says, do not take away ever from my mouth the word of your truthful, your unchanging, wavering, dependable, trustworthy, and reliable, utterly capable, empowering, and great, everlasting testimony, because indeed my hope completely trusting in your words. And so, yeah, you know, then I go over to the book of Romans, and it says, for Christ is the end of the Torah, for righteousness to everyone that believes it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's a little hard to take, isn't it?
Well,
yeah,
it sounds
like somebody's in opposition to Yahweh, doesn't it?
This doesn't make any sense to me, because here's the...
Yeah, well,
you know,
it doesn't to me either.
Great,
I suppose,
great,
you know. You know where we stand with old Paulos, he who is lowly and little, you know.
That's another thing.
You know, you
go
take
ahead.
His name. You know, Yahweh puts a lot of emphasis on names. You know, Dod. You know, loved. Shimon.
Right.
He listens. You know, Yahukanan. You know, Yahweh is merciful. You know, Zachariah. Remember Yael Yah. Yahweh is the mighty one. You know, and along comes this guy. And his name is Question Him. You know, can you imagine a guy that's going to speak in direct opposition to the creator of the universe, you know, and create a religion that misleads billions of people and gets them off the path of the Moed Mikra, and his name is Question Him, and nobody questions him. Imagine that. Imagine Yah even having a spokesman with such a name. Question Him.
Wow. Yeah,
isn't that a mighty name? Then he changes his name to He Who Is Lowly and Little. Wow, so he who is minuscule and small. You know, I don't think people that are minuscule and small speak for Yahweh ever, do they? I mean, I've never seen one.
Not only when they are acting in humility, which is the exact opposite of what I see from Paul with all of his, you know, boasting in himself and, you know, where he talks about being, having to be restrained by the enemy because of his pride, you know.
Satan was helping Yahweh humble him. Yeah, because he had to stay humble for Yahweh. So Satan got in there and helped. And that's an amazing one to me. How would anybody think Satan was working on Yahweh's team?
Well, I'm sorry. No, it's just amazing because, you know, I was a Christian for 20-plus years, and Paul was my hero at the time. And it's like, how did I never see what David saw in the Torah? You know, those 20 years, I just, you know, I thought it was a law, and I just didn't get it. And it's almost like Paul had a, you know, control of my mind. It was, you know, preventing me from seeing.
Well, it's little wonder,
like,
you know, you walk into a religious institution. And by the way, are you up in Alaska right now?
Yeah, we're up in Alaska.
Okay. How's the weather?
You know, it's quite amazing. It's 44 degrees out, which is just, just awesome. I mean, people out in their shorts and tank tops walking the streets.
Yeah, you're sitting right here in Jacksonville weather then. I think we're about 55 right now, so not too far off. But I have to tell you, yeah, it's probably little wonder. It's probably little wonder that Paul was your hero. He's many of them's hero because in the circus, you know, you walk in there every Sunday, and you, if you go to the Bible study, what are they reading? Well, they bounce from Ephesians to Acts to Romans, don't they? Over and over and over and over and over.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
No, they don't really have much.
When they want to make a point and usually get more money, they'll throw a little Old Testament in.
Yeah. They'll throw some. They'll misquote Malachi. That's what they'll do, and they'll talk about the 10%, which is unbelievable to me. You know, they'll test me on this. And who was Yahweh talking to there? He was talking to the clergy. And he was telling them to give back what they had stolen.
Well, I remember when Yada, you know, Yada and JB, they went ahead and translated some of Paul's writings, I believe in Romans. It was just a bunch of gibberish. I mean, it didn't even make sense.
It was apparently poorly written. It was so poorly written. There were people, I was going back and reading some of the some of the more intellectual minds of antiquity, or say in the last 1,000 years, that have went over Paul's stuff, and many of them didn't believe that Paul's letters were, you know, scriptural because they were just so poorly written. They said nobody could even believe that such drivel could be considered coming from the creator of the universe. And of course it's true, you know.
Yeah, and getting back to what Tony was saying, I think where I felt kind of, I felt shame, actually. I was just ashamed of myself, where I started to, when I came into the truth and I looked back, I'm like, wow, you know, why didn't I see that he was in opposition to the men who literally broke bread with Yahusha, you know, for a little over 3 years. I mean, why didn't I see this? I mean, this guy just, you know, he had a beef with the apostles, and right away, not just me, but millions and millions of people cleave to his writings. I mean,
well, you're taught to believe that, and this is exactly where we were at here in 1944.
Right,
is talking about, you know, listening to your words as your eternal witness. And, of course, you have to, we understand that you have to seriously consider Yahweh's words. Not what religious copy editors put in. You don't have to seriously consider anything from religious material, as far as I can tell. Mm-hmm. You know, but when you can get to the root of his words, you know, that's what really counts and what it is he's saying. Because that's how he represents himself, and that's how we know how to approach Yahweh. I mean, I wouldn't want to approach Yahweh in any religious sense of the word, would you?
No. No.
Would you, Tony?
Not at all.
I mean,
until
I knew Yahweh, I mean, I probably would have thought from a religious perspective, okay, this is God, I better get on my knees or something.
You know what really set me free was when I came to recognize that the Torah was not a law, that it was instructions that are, you know, good and beneficial for us, that bring life, that show us the path to walk with Yahweh on our feet, standing up with him, and not bowing down constantly in fear and trembling and you know, under this curse of the law that, you know, that Paul talks about. It's just, that set me free. I mean, you can't keep a law perfectly, but you can observe his Torah and look at it closely and examine it and respond to it. That's easy. Anybody can do that. And it's free.
Yeah, there's no charge. He paid the price, you know. I mean, all he's asking for is a little serious consideration. Isn't that what most people want in a relationship? Yeah. Serious consideration?
Absolutely.
I know I do.
Absolutely.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And that's fair. You know, sadly, so many people want to get off the idea that this is a relational thing. And yet you'll hear Christians say, oh, I'm not part of a religion. I have a relationship. Well,
right.
How does that work out? How?
I have a relationship with Jesus Christ.
Well, they got a relationship with some story inside their mind. You know, it's not a very real relationship. There's nothing tangible to it. There couldn't be.
No.
You know, I mean,
based on lie after lie after lie.
Right.
I mean,
and
if your relationship is based on lies, do you really know? Are you really in a relationship? And is it a good relationship? I mean, if my wife and I lied to each other constantly, and never, you know, never were truthful, and yet we said how much we love each other and how much, you know, we cared about one another and knew one another, but everything we told each other was a lie. That's a horrible relationship.
Well, and it's not just that. Imagine you talked about this great relationship that you had, okay, with your wife, and every time you talked about your wife, you talked about the neighbor who spoke in opposition to your wife all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
That'd go over like hand grenades, wouldn't it? I mean, seriously.
Yeah. Yeah,
we've got another caller that called in too from the 812 area code. I'm not sure where that's at. Are you with us?
Are you talking about me?
Well, if you're in that 812
okay,
area code, I am.
I'm just listening in. My wife is
okay.
Using the computer, so I'm using the program. And if Yada was on. I wanted to ask him a question about the scripture in Devarim about it's only a few the thousands, not millions of people that will eventually be in the family of Yahweh. But
well, yeah, he's talking about who will receive mercy. Uh-huh, yeah.
And
it does say thousands there.
Yeah, I remember hearing that in a sermon. Oh, back in the early 70s, along with the business that when you die, a person's they're dead. They are not in hell or they're not in heaven. But Yada's not on, so I was just listening in, and I didn't push number one on the phone.
No. I'm sorry. I saw you there, so I just put you on. It doesn't
okay.
tell me one way or another. You know,
one
thing I'll say about that, you know, Zacharyanian talks about two-thirds of the family, and he's talking about people within Jerusalem. And he says two-thirds of them are dead, but I'm going to take this one-third, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then he talks about 50% of them leaving, being cut off.
Wow.
So, you know, you go from, say, 11 million or 7 million people down to two-thirds dead, down to half of them gone, and you still got a pretty large group, you know, all things considered.
I remember years ago going through, I think it's Ezekiel, and it talks about, as I understand it, Ezekiel's about talking about the Israelites of today, which would not mm-hmm. be the Jews, but the Israelites, and it would a third of them were to die by war, a third by disease and famine, then they were to go into captivity, and there another third were going to die by the sword and by famine. And then you take another script, you're down to 10% of them, and then you take somewhere it says that there will be 10 women for every man, indicate that only 1% of the Israelites, the non-Jewish Israelites, would survive. So it's like 1% of the men, wherever these Israelites are at, I presume in Europe and United States, Canada.
Well, I would think anybody can be adopted in, you know, to the family. We know this.
Oh, I was talking about the physical descendants of Israel.
Yeah, but when he talks about thousands, he's not necessarily talking about you know.
That's talking about spiritual relationship.
Yeah, he's talking about people that have been adopted into the family and everything else. But when he talks about thousands, and when he's talking about his mercy, I believe he's talking about the Teruah harvest there.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because it's not too merciful to go through 7 years of the great calamity, as Yasha Yahu calls it, or tribulation as it's written in Greek. You know, that's not exactly merciful. You know, there might be great rewards at the end, but boy, you are walking through it. You know what I mean?
Oh,
and
yeah.
When he talks about that Teruah harvest, you know, being so small. I mean, it's a really small harvest. And I can believe it's down to thousands. Because look at every single little nook and cranny that can get you off the path. And they all involve some kind of religious notion, you know.
Right.
There's a new one out there about being a vegan.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
well, we're not
going to
have
here.
Lamb at Passover because Yahweh was a vegetarian and men were evil and they taught animals to eat other animals and all this nonsense.
You say a vegan?
You know, and if they don't like something that's in Yahweh's words, they say, well, that was just copy edited in. Who says that the Dead Sea Scrolls are perfect? Well, you know, they're the oldest thing we have. I don't know, you know, what scribe was 100% perfect, but I'm sure there were some that were pretty accurate. You know. I mean, but go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Tony.
Oh, no. I thought we have, there's lots of people around here, vegans or vegans or whatever they are, but I didn't know that they had vegan Passover people. That's interesting.
Oh, they do. I suppose that they painted the upright poles with pomegranate juice. I don't know. You know, in their mind, but they make it up as they go. And they claim some rabbi. Now can you imagine that Yahweh engages a rabbi? And he's got the oldest scripts in the world, this guy. He wrote a book. And, of course, he's selling his book. It's called The Land of Meat and Honey or something. And he's got the oldest scripts, and he's got them locked away in a vault somewhere. So Yahweh gave his words, made sure his words ended up in the hands of a religious cleric who then put them in a vault and won't share them with anybody. What do you think
of that? Well, that's just like religious people. I mean, to hide his testimony from people so that you can, you know, use your manipulation and control and to just say what you want to say and keep the people dumb and ignorant and paying you money to reveal God's word to you. It's what they did
for years. Yeah, isn't that what the Catholics did for years? Well, isn't that what they all do? But the Catholics did that for years. They absolutely hid as much as the word as they could.
Talking about
and by the way, who's on the phone now? Who is it?
Rod from Indiana, the 812.
Bob?
You're talking about
okay,
money.
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend of mine that used to be in the same cult that I was in, a man from up in Canada, Sault Ste. Marie.
No, Bob, it's a good point. It's perfect. It fits in perfect with these guys. But there is a group that thinks that.
I was talking to him. I said, I'll bet I sent at least $100,000 in my lifetime in 30 years or so, and he said he sent at least that much money in.
Yeah, they call us a cult. There's nowhere to send money here. There's no money to this.
Well,
you know,
if you really think about it, Osho is sort of a cult. He was one man, and he had his followers, and he was right. He knew he was right because he was right, but...
No, he was just
the
guy telling the truth.
I've called all my life a cult religion of small and different. Now that I'm not in that group anymore, I look at the big churches, and are they really that much different? You know, they all take money, and sometimes they're right and they're only right. And seems like it's more of a bullying thing than anything else. Like, they're big and, like... we're small, And so we're wrong. To me, it seems like all you got to do is be small and be intense about what you believe and what you know, and you're going to be labeled as a cult. Especially if they don't like
you. I think if you seriously consider Yahweh's words, I mean, I've seen people post an unpopular truth here on FB. Jossie had one the other day. They were calling her a cult because she seriously, I think it was Jossie that did the post, because she seriously considered Yahweh's words. So they were saying she was a member of a cult.
Let me tell you something, Larry. If there's people out there on FB that want to debate Jossie or Sherry or Sonia, they got problems.
Mm-hmm.
They better come equipped.
Yeah, well, yeah,
they're
not going to win that debate because
no,
it's going to be their words against Yahweh's words.
That's right. And I tell you what, they're I call them the Three Amigas. That's,
there you go.
Yeah, Yah's word is powerful, and, you know, those ladies there, they're awesome.
Well, if only we all say, I will observe your Torah continually and consistently, always and forever, as an eternal witness.
Mm.
I mean, what a first-class world we would have.
That's right.
We wouldn't have these trillions of dollars being spent on militarism, on a foolish public school system, on religious institutions. I'm not sure who the bigger crooks are, okay? But I do know this. I know if you took the public school systems, the money spent on war and military, and the money spent on religion, and you kept it in your communities and in your economies, probably every country in the world would be wealthy.
Wow.
I mean, think about it.
Oh, yeah.
They're all rattles.
That doesn't make such a difference.
You know, the next statement that flows out from the previous one, where he's talking about always and forever as an eternal witness, and he's speaking about Yahweh's words, and I will choose to walk in its freedom. Well, that's pretty tough if it's law. Because indeed, I have sought after, inquired about, found, and have looked to your precepts and directions. So, you know, he's telling us that, you know, there's freedom in the Torah. And he's talking about the Torah. So it's pretty hard to say, I've looked at your laws and found the freedom.
Wow, that's right.
You know, it does actually wash. It's no way means law. Yeah. But, you know, how many of us fell for that? You know, Tony did. I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Well, to be fair, 613
laws.
To be fair,
no, go ahead.
I was raised, you know, as a kid in the Christian church, and you know, when you're a child, you know, it's no wonder Yahweh says that you know, the fathers will, you know, cause their children to be cursed for four generations, because, you know, who knows how many generations of my ancestors, you know, walked in Christianity blindly because their parents raised them that way. And my parents raised me that way, and, you know, it took me over 30 years to, you know, figure out the truth, because nobody told it to me.
Yeah, and I have a lot of respect for that, too. I was not raised in a religious household, but I was raised by atheists, okay? So I have a little bit of an, you know, easier edge, probably, than most people that were actually raised in religion.
I was in the Sunday school class, you know, at age 5 years old, posting little Father Abraham stickers on the board, and, you know, making the little, you know, Bible scenes and doing all that fun stuff from the moment I was born. I was born into it.
And what group were you with? Which church was it? that you were raised
off,
in.
Well, you know, it's funny that Bob's from Indiana. We started off in Indiana as in a Mennonite church, which is very conservative.
I know what Mennonite are. I actually have a good friend. She's Mennonite. Yeah, Mary Penner. She's German, basically. Really, the Amish is
right.
A little, like one step a little deeper than the Mennonites. But
yeah, and she probably wore the head covering that is a direction that Paul gave again, another commandment of Paul to wear the head covering.
I've never seen it. I've never seen the head covering. You know, I see religious people with their little, you know, let's play religious dress up, and they have their hats on. Of course, you know where the yarmulke comes from, don't you? In Babylon, they'd shave their head in the shape of the sun, and the yarmulke would cover it so it wouldn't get burnt, you know, get a sunburn on their head.
Didn't realize that.
Yeah, that's where the yarmulke comes from.
Well, the yarmulke is nowhere in Yah's word. It's not there.
Right. It came from a man.
Yeah, it's a religious tradition of man, which the rabbis essentially began to say in their oral law that, you know, after a while, that the very traditions became law. They said if the Jewish community did a tradition long enough, then that tradition was law. And
yeah,
so
that's
where that's how they adopted the yarmulke as part of their religion.
Well, you know, William had brought up earlier today on the show talking about Abraham following the Torah. And Torah is guidance and advice. There's a couple of things we could say here. You know, sure, Abraham followed the Torah. That means he followed the guidance that Yahweh gave him. It doesn't mean anything other than that. And you know, they said, well, the Torah hadn't been written. Well, you know, there's another side to that, too. Yahweh was well aware. That's why he can, he doesn't predict the future. He reports what's being seen in the future. He's seen the future. So he certainly knew his own words.
That's an awesome point that you bring up, because I think people don't understand the idea that, and I love how Yada, you know, really gives us a great understanding of the theory of relativity and how that applies to space and time, because understanding that Yahweh had already written his Torah forever. It was written before we came here. It was written while we're written forever, eternally. And so when he spoke it to Abraham, it wasn't anything new. It was already there. And, you know, if a Christian could just get that in their mind, that he had already written the Torah, and it's forever. And then, and just in case you didn't remember that, he says over and over and over again, my word stands forever. My Torah is everlasting. You know, he reminds you 100 times because he knows just how...
That's a good, strong point, too. It means forever. And from where I sit, if I'm at a space point in time, I can go in either direction, and it's still forever, isn't it?
Forever behind you and forever in front of you. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. And
I can go either way.
If you just get that one point, then all of a sudden you realize that he's never going to say anything to contradict what he already said. So you can't have a new testament that cancels and trumps the old. There is no Old Testament. There's no Old Covenant. It is one covenant. Forever before and forever ahead.
Very
that's
well
that's
stated. Yeah, and that's exactly right. I mean, again, you know, you talk about, and that's a subject that I really like. To be honest with you, I enjoyed realizing, I don't know about you guys, I know it bothered some people to find out Paul was a jerk. Didn't bother me at all. I never liked it. You know, he'd sit around and brag about what an important man he was and all this, and these other guys brag about him. And there was so little attention paid to what Yahusha had to say. You know, it was all about Paul. And I was happy to find out Paul was a jerk. I was happy to find out that, I was ecstatic to understand that Yahweh was not a religious deity. But I'll tell you what really, really hit home with me, how I realized it was all real, was in the Ur section of Yad Yah when he breaks down relativity. I mean, it's not like Yahweh was standing on this planet. You know, he was talking about 6 24-hour periods of time from his own perspective. And it's got to take a really weak mind once you show them that to think, well, and I've actually had people do this, he means 6 days. 6 days means 6 days. And I say, yeah, it does. And it means from his perspective. But they think it means 6 earth days. It's unbelievable to me. I mean, it is 6 24-hour periods of time. That's and he's still in day six. That's another thing. You know, once you come to realize that the seventh day is the promise of the seventh day, the promise of Sukkah, the promise of 1,000 years of rest, then you get it. Right?
That's right. Yep. Absolutely. You know, Larry, I mean, your statement about, you know, once you realize that Yahweh's word about creating things in the 6 day from his perspective based on relativity, that sets you free because you suddenly realize that Yahweh and science are not in disagreement. They are, except for the pseudoscience, which, you know, global warming and all that other, you know, garbage that's mind control. But, you know, it sets you free when you realize that, yes, you know, dinosaurs were created during the process, maybe a couple million years from our perspective, but only 2 or 3 days ago from, you know, Yahweh's perspective. And so when you realize suddenly, you know, because as a Christian, you have to hold on to the belief that it was 6 actual days and the earth is only 6,000 years old. And, you know, that keeps you in the loony bin, really. I mean, you're separated from 80% of humanity that actually believes science when you believe that way.
What you've done is made a mockery of Yahweh's words, and isn't I'm sure
right.
I'm sure that makes the enemy happy, you know. And then the flood was worldwide, and Adam was the first man, you know. And you sit around and, you know, you look like a horse's ass, you know.
Well, and be that as it may, he did a good job because he fooled almost 2 billion of the world's population into
believing the
fairy tale.
Yeah, supposedly the most educated. You know, if you're to listen to the West, right? They're more the educated ones and all this. I mean, and by and large, many of them are, but many of them aren't. You know, there's a matrix that they have developed. It seems to me that our reality is somewhat fabricated. There's a fabricated reality we all exist in, and then there's what's real, which is what we're talking about. And it's more real than you or I sitting here. It was here before us, and it's going to be here long after most of this is gone, or all of it's gone. Right?
That's right.
But go ahead. No, that was really interesting. I wanted to hear a little more. I liked it. It was well put. You know. You make a mockery of Yahweh's words. Go ahead.
You know, speaking of that, and addressing a little bit of what Bob had said, you talked about the statement where he said that thousands would. Thousands are going to enter the way. And, you know, when I read the words of Yahusha in the book of Matanyahu, he said, "How narrow is the gate and difficult the road that leads to life, and few find it." And, you know, I'm looking at that, and then I read, you know, the way that King James quotes it, that mercy to thousands of generations. And, you know, it doesn't compute. You can't show mercy to thousands of generations if the gate is narrow and few will find it.
And, you know, and I'm talking to one of my Christian relatives, and I say to them, you know, Christianity is the, has, you know, over 2 billion people on the earth. You're talking about a fourth of the earth's population in Christianity. How is that narrow? How is that few? And then I explained to them that Yahweh said that he would show his mercy to thousands, not 1,000 generations. I said, how can you show mercy to thousands unless Yahweh made a mistake and used the wrong word? But, you know, you go to the Hebrew, you go to the oldest extant manuscripts, and it's, he shows mercy to thousands. And that's fitting with what Yahusha said about the gate being narrow. So, you know,
and
they
he talks
said, well,
about... No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, the reply that I got was shocking, and it was, well, you know, one-fourth is still a minority, so that's still narrow. Come on.
Yeah, billions.
You know, I got a question, Larry, and for everybody in the chat room and everyone listening at home. In Matanyahu, right, in 15:26, and I'm reading out of the scriptures here, because I've never translated this. I don't know if anybody has, and that's what I'm asking. But it says, and he answering said, it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. But she said, yea, master, for even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table. I wonder if this is accurate, I mean, or even remotely close, because, I mean, basically he called this woman a dog.
Where is that?
I don't suggest
most of what you find in a Christian New Testament is very accurate. I don't
right,
believe it is.
Right. Well, I mean, this
so
is,
I've,
you know,
never
right, I
that
get
verse.
That. But I just wonder if anybody in the chat room or anyone has ever looked at this. Because, I mean, it's pretty harsh. But just a question I just wanted to throw out there.
Hmm. Well, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure what it even means. I doubt if he said that.
Well,
it doesn't make a lot of sense,
you know,
to me.
William, to answer that, you know, I've been a part of this this Torah observant community that's, you know, there are people that are Torah observant yet they're not really out of religion yet, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And they still believe that all the New Testament is the inspired, inerrant word of God. And, you know, which is, you know, it's more mind control, you know, it's keeping you deaf and dumb. And so,
you know, even in English-based, you know, covenant writing, if you want to call it covenant writings, I think I'd call that an Old Testament. If, you know, that's not even the inerrant word of the Creator. I mean, it's horrible. You know, it sounds like a bunch of religious rubbish.
Right, right. Well, that's why I brought it up. I'm wondering if it's just another, you know, fictitious story that was added in, like when he was drawing in the sand and talking about the woman you know, cast the first stone or whatever, and that was added in. That's not in the original.
They added that in the 8th century.
Right.
Yeah, because there were thousands of parchments prior to that, and it didn't exist. So, yeah, that was... Look, how about the one... I think the one that really should throw everybody for a loop, if they would just think about it, is judge not, lest you be judged. I find that the more a verse is parroted, the more apt it is to be completely wrong. And then you look in the actual parchments and it says, instead of judge not lest you be judged, it says, do not lead others, separate others or you will find you yourself separated. Now that doesn't even say the same thing. And if you think about judge not lest you be judged, I mean, you're going to tell me that the Creator of the universe just told you not to use your head.
Hmm.
He spends so much time telling us to think about it, consider my words, right? I mean, that's thinking. That's actively participating. And then he's going to tell you, but I don't want you to judge. I don't want you to exercise your nisama. what kind of a person would tell you not to make judgments? Think about it. I make judgments
every
day. A pastor
or a priest would tell you that.
Yeah, well, that's great.
A pastor or a priest.
Yeah, because you're messing up their money.
Well, we've got a whole group of people on, and anybody wants to chime in, they can. We've got people from the 126 area code, 360.
Can you hear me?
Feel free to chime in.
Yeah, there's somebody there, Larry.
Yeah, can you hear me, Larry? This is Richard.
Yeah, Richard. Jump on in here with both feet.
Doesn't it sound like that would be one of the rabbinical copy edits where he says, you know, we're not supposed to talk to anybody outside the Jewish family, and therefore you're all dogs. That sounds really rabbinical to me.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, it sort of does. Yeah, it does. It really does.
I
don't know how true it would be.
Yeah, that sounds like an add-in, you know.
Yeah, and the reason I bring it up, Richard, is because... Yeah, it's used a lot, and like especially when I used to hear like these Israelite guys, you know, the Hebrew Israelite, black Hebrew Israelites, they would throw that out there all the time, and you know, it just never sat well with me. I mean, it's cruel. So it's just something I wanted to put out there and look into a little bit, because I don't think it's accurate, but
yeah,
I don't know for sure.
I appreciate it, because it does sound, you know, the Torah doesn't say anything about don't talk to anybody outside. He just says don't do what they do. He never says don't communicate with them.
Right, and I've seen somebody in the chat room posted that he said dogs, but I you know, the way that I interpret it is he's basically looking at her and saying, you know, she's a dog. Because, I mean, it's plural, but she's one of the dogs. You know, why would he say that to her? So, it's just something I'd like to look into.
Well, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and it doesn't speak well to me. It doesn't say anything
to
me. You know, even a dog gets the scraps off the table. You know, come on. What does that have to do with the past?
That's that clergy lady mess, too. You know,
is that a Muhammad
quote? Y'all are down there.
Sounds almost like a Muslim type thing.
Well, one thing. Can I jump
it's
in?
It's pretty
here?
Rough.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
Okay,
this is a family hour tonight, so
okay,
please jump right in.
The Samaritan woman is the one that said, can't the dogs. She's the one that's talking about. Dog. Wasn't she the one that was talking about the crumbs that fall on the floor? And he would been a Jew, so she would be talking to him as if he were a regular Jew. And a regular Jew would think of them as being dogs. So that may be an explanation for that. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm definitely familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to point out that this is not extant in any of the 69 pre-Constantine manuscripts. So
okay.
We're going on kind of hearsay here. We really don't have any idea if this was ever really said.
It's in the Codex Sinaiticus, but that was post-Constantine.
Correct.
Okay, so this isn't in the 69 parchments. It is not there.
That's correct.
What?
Okay.
Yeah, it's not in it.
I'm listening on the
phone.
Hello?
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 Yeah, guys, jump right in.
Is this Hello? Larry?
Yeah, this is Larry.
Uh-huh. Hey, Larry, it may be a little off topic, but I know that Pesach is coming out in the feet. and I'm new to this, and I really want to celebrate it, and I want to know what, and I don't want to be, you know, get all involved in just being ritualistic, but what do you do for Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim?
Well, I get out the wine, okay, and I grill some lamb, and I have some matzah, and then I have, you know, some olive oil with some bitter herbs in it, and I'll probably use parsley. And I'll dip that in there, and I'll eat it, and I'll eat my lamb, and I'll drink my wine, and this year, hopefully, I'll have a few people with me, and we'll sit around and discuss what it all means. I've even got a Pesach poll here. You know, one of the things they did, with they would eat their meal with this staff in their hands, and I've got one. And, of course, that represented the upright pole, didn't it?
Yeah.
So we're,
now,
you know,
let me ask,
just go ahead.
How about, so matzah is or is not part of Pesach, the 7 days?
I really think it does become. I think it is. I think it is. It, even though it's a separate mikra, obviously he was doing something separate. He was, you know, after his body died, his nefesh or soul was in Sheol, ransoming us. So each day for 7 days, I'll eat unleavened bread and I'll think about that. You know, not having the ferment and the poison of Babylon and Babylonian concepts and things like that.
And believe me, I do understand the means behind the feast. I just have never celebrated them, so I don't have a clue how to do that. And one thing
there's not that much we can do. I mean, if most of us, and I'm assuming you're probably going to be where most of us was for years, unless you got somebody else in your area that does it, you'll probably be alone doing it.
Right. I live alone as well, so yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I know, and it's rough, you know, and I'm not going to say it's rough, but what I grill it, I grill some lamb, and you know, I drink some wine, and I break some bread, and I think about it, and I read and recite. That's what I do.
A few minutes behind.
Are all the feast days considered Sabbath, where you don't work or anything?
Where you don't what now?
Work.
Well, you know, I set those days apart. But, you know, it's more an observation. I do set them apart. They're going to be different type of days for me for that Monday, you know, Tuesday and Wednesday in this year. But I, you know, I do own a business, and I will have to do some work. I'm just not going to do my normal work.
Okay, so for 7 days, beginning at Pesach, or 7 days after Pesach, you you have unleavened bread.
That's right.
And that's the, when you eat, that's the only thing you eat. But,
the only thing I eat. I just won't have any leavened bread.
You'll have unleavened bread. You'll not have any yeast. Right.
Right. I just won't have any yeast. But yeah, I'm just not going to have leavened bread for, you know, 7 days.
So they're not, in other words, you don't celebrate them as Sabbaths as such where you take off work for that time period.
Well, I'm in a position where I really can't. But I can change some things to where I'm not doing my normal work day, and I won't. You know, I'll set them aside, and I'll spend more time reading and reciting, and, you know, I'll look at it as just, you know, a week-long feast. It is the feast of unleavened bread.
Yeah.
You know, I'll make myself some crepes in the morning and put fresh strawberries in them and whipped cream on them, and I'll live it up a little bit. Why not?
Now, what about Bikurim? What, is there anything different you do there?
No, I'm just aware of it. And, you know, I'll read it, and I'll understand it, and I'll be thankful that I'm adopted into the family. You know, we're
it's about understanding. It's not a do thing, right? It's about understanding why these days are set apart. Why do we acknowledge them? If we didn't understand and that we were just doing, then we would be, religious.
Sure.
Right.
I totally understand that.
Yeah.
But as far as any actual doing, I didn't really have a clue of what to do.
You know what's going on?
I don't think it's an obedient, and I understand its observation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you do what you understand. That's
right,
what you do.
Right. Hey, guys, is it all right if I just read this from some of Yada's words?
Sure,
yeah,
go ahead.
Step right up and
do it. Yeah. He says, this is from Leviticus, which is Waikara, which means, and he called out, chapter 23. It says, Yahweh, one sentence short of a paragraph here. And Yahweh spoke these words
right
to Moshe
ahead.
In order to promise and say, please convey the word of God on behalf of the children of Israel, and so you should literally and completely convey to them that these godly appointed meeting times, and that's a key thing there, this is a time to meet with Yahweh. That's what we're doing. And so it says these appointed meeting times of Yahweh, which are set apart, invitations to be called out and meet, to be near them, shall be continuously proclaimed by you, as these are my godly appointed meeting times. And he goes on to say, 6 days you shall, it actually says, she shall consistently and actually engage in the service of the spiritual messenger. And then in the seventh day, there will be a Sabbath. So this is talking about just the weekly Sabbath. And just for everybody out there, if you're not participating in the weekly Sabbath, please start. Start taking a day off to study Yahweh's word every week. I can encourage that more and more. I'll get down here to where he actually talks about Pesach. It says, in the first month, on the 14th of the month, for the purpose of understanding at twilight, is Pesach, Passover. According to Yahweh, the 15th day of this same month is the festival feast of unleavened bread unto Yahweh. 7 days you shall eat bread without leavening yeast. The first foremost primary day exists as a set-apart and cleansing invitation to meet and be called out. You shall not do any of the work of the business of the heavenly messenger. And now, I'll stop right there. So he says the first day is, a day to set apart, to not do any work of the business of the heavenly messenger.
Which you can't do.
You can't
do it anyway.
Right. You couldn't. Exactly.
That's translated in every other translation as just, don't do any work.
That's not what
but
it
I
says.
Think, right. When you translate it correctly, it's talking about the work of Yahweh. He's saying, take the time, set aside the time, I think, to reflect on what he's done for you, what he's, doing for you to set you apart. So take the day off to focus on understanding what he has done and what he's going to continue to do. It continues. Come near and be present.
I wouldn't debate that. I mean, those days are set apart for me, I'm not going to be doing the same things I normally do. So.
Yeah, take the first day off. And then it says, come near and be present with the adoptive mother who enlightens and elevates unto Yahweh for 7 days. The seventh day is a set apart mikra, called out assembly. You shall not do any of the work of the service of the heavenly messenger. So again, on the seventh day, so, just to answer the gentleman's question about, what do you do for the 7 days, it just looks to me like he wants you to set the first day aside and the last day aside of the 7 days. And, during the other 7 days, he says to approach, every day, but you approach through the Ruach, through our heavenly mother, and that can be done. I suggest
take every evening and read the Torah and study it.
I totally agree.
I just didn't understand every day, in that 7 days. So.
Yeah. Memorialize it. Set it apart. Make it a special time. And, you know, if you have a neighbor who's, you know, not religious, invite them over. Make them a feast.
as long as they can keep religion out of the business. And if it's a guy, make sure he's been circumcised, you know. Don't invite him to the party. No.
Well, I just have to let you guys know that my story is like a lot of people's who, since I was old enough to go to church, I was in Christianity. So this has been about 2 years ago that I really started listening to Yada, and now I'm here where I am, understanding totally how it, and I had seen for a long time that something was wrong, and I couldn't put my finger on it. And, you know, I was really into reading the Bible all of my life, and I could never get around the fact that when I'd read through the entire Bible, well, and I'm saying Bible, of course, because that's all I knew then, when I get to Paul, it just took a left turn. And, you know, the whole
takes
book
a big
flowed.
Takes a U-turn.
Yeah, the whole book flowed. The whole book flowed, and this guy comes out of nowhere and just changes the rules totally. Not rules, but you understand what I mean. The whole thing just takes a left turn. And I often thought, you know, if you just pull him out of that book, the whole thing flows and makes sense. It would change everything totally.
Right. You know that Paul had special revelation from Yahweh himself. He personally went up to heaven and spent 3 years hearing direct revelation from Jesus. So, you know, how can you disagree with that?
Yeah, well, they fail to tell you that Luke is Paul's historian. You know, they don't exactly point that out to you when you're listening to this tripe either. You know.
Well, and you know,
by the way,
thing
Luke
that,
is Paul's historian. You know, I mean, they don't tell you that, right?
Right. Exactly. And if you read Paul enough, you get this recurrent theme that he says, you know, of course, the Torah only can kill you. It doesn't do anything but, corruption and ruins you. It exposes your corruption, and then you can't do anything about it. That's what he keeps saying over and over, that the law kills, and he calls it law. And then he also fights against circumcision with all his heart. And then he says, don't let anybody judge you concerning any days or anything that you want to keep. In other words, they don't mean anything.
Yeah, one day is as good as the next.
Yeah, that's what he says over and over. It doesn't matter. So the three things of Torah that Yahweh keeps saying, these are the things that matter. He's in opposition to those very three things all the time.
Oh, yeah, well, I don't see anything instructive. Even the people that claim he was not speaking against the Torah when he's, you know, I mean, he even wished that people that were being circumcised, the knife would slip and they'd be castrated. You know,
yeah, exactly.
I can read that to you. You know,
yes,
so, exactly. You know, the fact is that, well, okay, let's say he didn't speak against the Torah when he called it pornography or wished everybody was castrated, whatever. What did he ever say that was instructive?
Nothing.
Exactly. It's a dribble. I mean,
he
goes on about himself an awful lot, you know.
Yeah. Yes. And he really doesn't, you know, it's like Jefferson wrote one time, Thomas Jefferson, Paul wouldn't let Jesus, and he said Jesus, of course, but he wouldn't let Jesus get a word in his life.
Is that what he wrote?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose that's true. You know, wow.
Let me ask you a question here. So Paul said, "Is the law then against the promises of God?" He says, "God forbid." Now, stop right there. The Torah observant will say, "See, Paul said that God forbid that the law is against the promises of God," and they kind of stop right there. But you read on, it says, For if there had been a law given which could have given life, verily righteousness should have been by the law. So now Paul's saying in the next sentence that righteousness, if there had been a law given which could give life, then righteousness would have been by the law. So he's completely contradicted himself.
Yes.
But then David said in Psalm 19, he says this, Yahweh's written rules for making good judgments are trustworthy and reliable. They are wholly vindicating, making righteous. Desire and covet them more than gold. So Paul just said there's no law, no Torah given to give life, and it can't give righteousness. And here David's saying his words are wholly vindicating, making righteous. So who are you going to believe? The king that God said that is man after his own heart, that he loves, that he's establishing his kingdom around the kingdom of Dod, around the kingdom of love. Or are you going to believe a guy that had a special revelation? And who are you going to believe?
Yeah, a secret meeting. And he was a wannabe rabbi. I don't see Yahweh actively engaging with the clerics in any meaningful way anywhere, ever.
Well, Christianity.
No, the words are diametrically opposed. They're complete opposition. One of them has to be right. One of them has to be wrong. I, for one, choose to stick with the guy that Yahweh said is the guy that is after his heart. Who he's,
my money's on Dod.
Yeah.
My money's on Dod. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that Yahweh does not engage clerics. He doesn't. He just doesn't. He's got a lot to say about the clerics, and none of it's good. You know,
Paul boasted of being the Pharisee of Pharisees, you know, seated at the feet of Gamaliel, probably the most religious person you could possibly be. And, Yahweh chose to use him to spread this new message, a new testament.
And Marcion put it all in a nice little book and called it a New Testament and threw Yahweh's words aside, calling them out of vogue, because that's what Old Testament really means, right? So, I'd pretty much say, and by the way, you know, we can go back to just what Yada had talked about and Matanyahu, where Yahusha is talking about the fruit of a tree. If a tree, you know, develops bad fruit, it's a bad tree. You know, 2 billion Christians, I mean, that's on the planet today. But, I mean, think back over the last, 2,000 years. You know,
well,
corrupted
it's
many,
almost
many
like
people.
Once, it's like once you see it, you see all the admonitions against this very person named Paul, who was Shaul originally. So you begin to see all the times that Yahusha said, this guy's coming, and here's what he's going to do. And yet, in Christianity, it's so overlooked because nobody studies the Torah, really, in Christianity. And if they do, they always try to sync it up with Paul somehow. And you have to just jump through tremendous hoops to get it all to fit.
Well, we went over this on Shattering Myths. I mean, it's purposeful misdirection. You know, we know he spoke Hebrew. He said, upon this rock I'll establish my mikra, right? And that becomes ecclesia, which makes sense. And suddenly it becomes a church, and that makes no sense at all. Has a completely divergent meaning. It doesn't mean the same thing. And so,
hello, can I jump in here?
Yeah, please do.
Hello, this is Hendro from England. Hello, Larry, how are you doing?
Well, Hendro,
how are you doing? I want to take a massive step back. Obviously, it's coming up to my first Passover. I'm really looking forward to it.
Uh-huh.
But listening to you guys is like watching people in a restaurant eat a beautiful meal. And, boy, the food looks good. And I can almost taste it. I can almost smell it. I'm really looking forward to it. I'll tell you how far I've progressed, myself and my good lady, Angie. We looked at Yahweh's name in Paleo-Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get any further than that. It's just absolute. There's more in his name than, you know, I feel I found in all of Christianity. It almost, you know, brought me to tears. And then when something touches you deep inside, it's just absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Well, that hand reaching out, that hand reaching out really does speak of the invitations and the calling out. And then the people standing up. They're not on their knees. They're standing up. And then that tent peg in the middle of the home, you know, which is, you know, we want that to grow, because the more people we get in, the richer our lives are going to be forever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's so beautiful. It's one word. Blew me away. We were nearly in tears. You know, it's just so loving, so caring, so true, so different to what, you know, the foolishness that we've been taught before.
Oh, and it is foolishness. I mean, you can't be in direct opposition to the creator of the universe and at the same time claim to speak for the creator of the universe. That's foolish. That's as foolish as it gets. And the people that actually, you know, make these claims that they're speaking on behalf of Yahweh, they won't just see death. They're going to see a lot worse than death.
Yeah.
Because they've misled many, many people. They'll get to live forever.
Yeah.
In a place they don't want to be.
I don't know if you're aware, there was a political man that died over here called Tony Benn. And when you're seeing things through Torah eyes, I realize that it's a religion. Thousands and thousands of people, you know, mourning the death of this man who led everyone away from Yahweh. Well, through his politics.
Well, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame.
Yeah,
these, you know, I mean, Sheol is going to be a very religious place. You know, it'll be full of religion and politics, and you know, that's who's going to be there.
Yeah.
You know, the grandmas that got misled, that you know, they did all the wrong things because they were taught all the wrong things, and they were taught never to question. You know, they're not going to have to worry about that. They're not going to be suffering. But the political types and the religious types that have decided to lead people down the road to enrich themselves and to mislead others, those people are going to get to suffer. And they've got it coming because they've caused a lot of pain to a lot of people that, you know, it didn't have to happen. You know, I can't, you know, one of the things I think we can all agree on, when we come to an understanding of Yahweh's words, I would think that everybody on this telephone line, and I would think, and there's seven right now besides myself, oddly enough, and everybody in the chat room, I would hope were the type of people that would get excited and want to share it with other people.
Oh, very
and
much so.
Certainly not in any way to mislead. And by the way, I want to thank everybody because we're going off the air now, and Shabbat Shalom to everybody in the chat room, but we can stay on the line.
Happy Shabbat
to
everyone. Shabbat Shalom, everybody.
Thank you very much, Larry and William, for your help.
No, thank you guys. Believe me, I was flatly worn out this week. I was, whoa, you know,
well,
you seem
like you're lively now, buddy.
Busy. I was wondering, how am I going to get through this hour and a half, really? What Yada does is amazing. I mean, you know, he stays hooked in, and, you know, not a lot of people have his focus or his mind, you know, to where he can do that. And I know he's turned a lot of us around and shared truth with a lot of us, and I'm thankful he's done that, really. It's a labor of love, I'm sure of that.
Well,
it's a lot.
I thank Yah for that, and I thank Yah for using people like him and yourself, Larry. And truly, I'm so grateful for that. Really, is Hendro still on the line? Yeah, I was just thinking of something to say. I mean, at the end of the day, I love Yada and the way he does things, but you've set the bar really high. It's different. I mean, what's better, the front two legs of a horse or the back two legs of a horse? No one wants a two-legged horse.
Well, I wanted to ask you if you felt like a weight was lifted off your shoulders, like there's no more burden when you came into Yada's truth. I mean, personally, I just felt this sense of freedom.
I'm outside the restaurant, remember, looking through the window because Passover's not here yet.
Okay.
You know, I'm looking at the beautiful food. I can see you chewing. It looks succulent. It looks beautiful. It's wonderful, you know. I just really want you guys to appreciate what you've got, you know. It's so beautiful to hear you talking about Yahweh's word. And I understand little bits, you know. You know, I've just come from McDonald's, by the way. You know, you know, and you're eating the best food I've ever seen. So, and you don't know who's listening. That's the other thing. You know, I've only been listening for a couple of months, but I listen to a lot of stuff on YouTube and that sort of thing. And I listen to as much as I can, you know, and listen live as much as I can. Obviously, I'm in a different time zone, but it's you know.
Yeah, but Hendro, you've got to get your time zone together with mine because I know Yalda sent you over that phone. I was asking her today when you're ready to go. She's ready to get you going, man.
I just think there's over here we seem to have a different telecom socket thing because I've got the lead, but it doesn't fit my telephone socket, and I'm going to have to get one put in upstairs.
Oh, really?
You know, up in my study because I've got a cordless phone up here. You see. But I'm actually going to need to plug that phone in on my desk. So I've got to get an engineer to put a socket in. So that's causing a little delay.
Just let me know when you're ready,
and we'll get you going.
Well,
yeah,
I appreciate everybody calling in. I appreciated all the points everybody made, and I really appreciated all the help.
Yeah,
so,
I'm sorry I dropped off on you there, Larry. I just figured that let everybody get their questions in and. Get some different perspectives. So I was here.
Yeah,
I
love all
the
perspectives.
What's that?
I agreed with every one of them. I loved all the perspectives.
Yeah,
I
they were
just,
all
they
awesome.
Were
thanks, guys, for calling in. Awesome.
Thanks, gentlemen. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Okay, well, everybody have a good night. I'm out of here. Hendro, a pleasure.
Thank
you for calling.
Speak to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.